Welcome to Halloween H4O, Talk Film Society's retrospective on all 11 Halloween films, including the brand new Halloween reboot? Requel? Something like that?
It's a sequel, Brandon. It's a sequel. So annoying when trades and websites are like, they're rebooting Star Trek with Star Trek 4. No, it's a sequel. It's not a reboot. Just because they're making a new something, the X-Files Season 10 was not a reboot, okay? It was a sequel season. Anyway, please continue with your inaccurate...
X-Files Season 10 was a something. So, I'm going to call it here. I'm going to hashtag requel.
Okay, that's fair. I'll allow that. What do you want?
You'll allow that. Excellent. Well, tonight we're not here to talk about that film. Not quite yet. We're still a couple weeks away, although we have reached the halfway point. My name is Brandon Shea Mutella. Joining me, as always, is my good friend Zach Moore. And joining us again for the third wonderful time, our good friend John Mills. How are you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm moving to the runes. They are locking me on target for this magnificent conversation I'm looking forward to having with you guys.
You are our thorn.
Very good.
Excellent. Well, tonight, we're going to be talking about The Curse of Michael Myers. Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers. Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers. Depends on which version you're
watching. Halloween 666, as some fans refer to it, according to the back of my producer's cut Blu-ray.
Hey, man, that was on the posters.
Was it?
Yeah, Halloween 666 was on at least a couple of the posters that I saw at the time. Hmm. And I remember even at the time seeing it and thinking, well, that's odd. That doesn't seem that, you know. But yes, it was obvious they were just going for broke and trying to get people in there any way they could.
Because Children of the Corn 6 did that too. They called it Children of the Corn 666.
Of course.
Of course. Why not? That's the thing you got to do when it's all evil. But so what we're going to do for this conversation tonight is we're going to first talk about just the theatrical cut of the film. And then after we've kind of dissected that and gone over the kill count and whatnot, then we're going to talk about the producer's cut. Because like this film had such a legendary status because there was this mythical producer's cut out there. And this is actually the first time that I've seen this producer's cut. And it's really quite fascinating. I think we're going to have some interesting things to say about this. And I think we're going to have some interesting things to say about this sequel as a whole. Because we've just gone like in some weird 90-degree turn where we're just going off in some random direction now with this sequel of the film. So, Zach, do you want to start us off with your trivia for the film?
Yeah, so this trivia will kind of touch on both. You know, I know we're going to separate our discussions, but it's kind of an overarching umbrella of trivia for both versions of Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers. Now, Daniel Ferrans has said his initial intent for Halloween 6 was to, quote, bridge the later films, 4 and 5, in the series to the earlier films, 1 and 2, while at the same time taking the story into new territory so that the series could expand for future installments. So I would definitely say he took it into new territory. I don't know about expanding for future installments, but be that as it may, that was his intention. This is the only Halloween movie in the entire series to be filmed in the fall. You've heard the classic stories about them filming in the California summer and spray painting leaves brown and carrying them around. Well, you can actually tell this one was filmed in the fall. So, you know, seasonally appropriate filming there. So good on them for that.
Was it a Christmas release movie?
Exactly, right? They can't coordinate, right? And the original draft for the movie, when the dad, who I refer to as Biff, comes home from work, he turns on the TV, there's a scene from Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, playing on the TV.
Oh,
so in a reverse of Halloween 3, where they're seeing a trailer for Halloween, and Halloween 6, they're watching the Halloween 3 scene. So that would have been interesting and fun. I wish they would have left that in there, but I think they were we hope people forget about that. We're not going there. So that was probably it. Interesting note, much like in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, how Kirk and Khan share no scenes together. The Halloween equivalent of those epic characters in the rivalry, Dr. Loomis and Michael, share no scenes in Halloween 6.
Oh, wow. So this is the Wrath of Khan of the Halloween franchise.
Yeah, there it is. I mean, these are the facts. You can't fight facts. This is the Wrath of Khan of Halloween. Also, that really annoying not Howard Stern DJ, who, you know, is clearly in the mold of him, Howard Stern was offered that role of shock jock Barry Sims, but he turned it down very wisely. I should say Howard Stern didn't need Halloween 6. It needed him more than they needed Howard Stern. So, also Daniel Ferrance, he wanted Christopher Lee to play Dr. Terrence Wynn, which I think would have been brilliant, but the same situation happened back in 78 when John Carpenter wanted Christopher Lee to play Dr. Loomis. That didn't pan out then either. They recast Dr. Wynn. We'll get into the recastings here because there's a few of them. But I thought that was very interesting. And although I loved seeing Kyle Riker in this film, it would have been great to see Christopher Lee and Donald Pleasance on screen together. Many of Donald Pleasance's scenes were cut from the film because Joe Chappelle found them boring in the theatrical cut. You know, as we talk about both versions here, you'll see that there is so much Dr. Loomis that is just cut from the theatrical version. It's very obvious, too. It's very choppy. It's not very well done. And I'm sitting here watching both cuts. I'm like, why did you cut all this? So apparently it was too boring, apparently. So for coming on from down high. So Denise Richards was considered for the role of Beth, but turned it down for being, quote, all boobs, which I thought was an interesting reason. She went on to star in such great films as The World Is Not Enough, one of the most underrated James Bond movies. But we can save that discussion for our Bond H6O podcast in a couple of years.
That is a whole other discussion there, Zach. It really, really is.
No time for that tonight. Enough movies to talk about. So let's talk about the recasting real quick. We have J.C. Brandy playing Jamie Lloyd, Paul Rudd playing Tommy Doyle, and Mitchell Ryan playing Dr. Wynn. These actors were all recast. Daniel Harris was the original Jamie, Brian Andrews was the original Tommy, and Robert Phelan was the original Dr. Wynn. Now, Dr. Wynn, he was in one brief scene in Halloween 1. It's a blink and you miss it scene, but I appreciate the fact that they at least got the name and there's some sense of continuity, because there's nothing more annoying than like, oh, here's my good colleague who was here the whole time. No, no, no. You know, there actually is a basis for this guy being in the movie. Now the Danny subplot is unresolved in the film, where the man in black is, you know, calling out to him. And the original intention was in the original script was Daniel Wynn escaping, kidnapping Danny, and playing a tournament in the next Michael Myers. That all didn't pan out, obviously. But I find it interesting. They kept trying to find a new Michael Myers. Like, they did try to do it with Jamie in Halloween 4. They didn't go back. They had this new kid here, Danny. Of course, his name being Danny, I think about Danny from The Shining. So, and creepy kids and all that. But so that's your flyover trivia. We'll get more into it here when we talk about the theatrical versus producers, but that's a nice umbrella. The final thing I will say is that Donald Pleasance, he announced inaccurately during making Halloween 5 that would be his final appearance, that Loomis would die. But he, of course, returned in this movie. And then in the producer's cut, he says, oh, you don't want to have that stroke. So that's a nice kind of wave of continuity after, and I mentioned in our last conversation, Brandon, that like, it looks like Loomis died at the end of 5.
Yes. Turned out to just be a stroke.
So there you have it. There's our flyover trivia for Halloween 6, Halloween 666, Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers, call it what you will.
The stroke and the death, those are easily confused. And I will point out for those that are listening to this because they are not, maybe not Star Trek fans, that Kyle Riker is the dad of Will Riker in a season 2 episode of Star Trek The Next Generation called The Icarus Factor. So we are all on Trek FM hosts. So if you're wondering why we're mentioning this random name of Kyle Riker and you have no idea what we're talking about, that is what we're talking
that
about.
Looking up Kyle Riker on IMDb will not help you. So.
Yes. Excellent, right on. Well, John, the first thing I'm going to ask you is about this movie, because when we were originally talking about doing this podcast, right off the bat, you're like, I want to be on for 6.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, I actually wind up having to give a lot of credit to Halloween 6 for, at the time, breaking me of my fear of Michael Myers.
Okay.
I saw this in the theater and was discontented enough while watching it to excuse myself at one point and go take a smoke break about halfway through. And then I came back because nobody took the hint that I wanted to leave. And I was like, fine.
The most shocking thing I've just heard in this is that this had a theatrical release. I just assumed this was direct-to-video.
Burn.
It should have been.
It wasn't Australia. Another bit of trivia.
Well, did not God bless them. There. They got spared. But, you know, it really is. It was fascinating because I think that what it is, and I know we've talked about this before, you know, like horror fans, you know, hope always springs eternal with the next sequel. sort of thing. And Halloween 5 was enough of a disappointment, but we were willing to work past that. We were willing to, okay, well, 6. Yeah, they're going to get back on track. They're going to get back on track with this.
Hey, we're for Star Trek.
Right? Exactly. And, yeah, it didn't go that way. And as a result, it became the legendary producer's cut was something that I was one of those people that constantly read about it. And where is this thing? And it was my buddy Joey, who's another huge Halloween fan, got a copy. And he put it up on digital. And he said, oh, you can finally see it now. And I said, oh, awesome. So this is the first time where I've seen a horror movie where there were two distinctly different cuts. And it is so fascinating to me because now for this, going back and for the first time in a while watching the theatrical cut again, just for the sake of comparing it, being able to see the seams and the reshoots and all of those other sorts of things is fascinating, especially mm-hmm. with the different endings, because I still laugh during the theatrical cuts ending when they're going through the hallways, because Michael seems to get a little bit shorter and not fit in his outfit quite as well during those moments. And I remember we just made endless fun of it. You know, it was, out of my way, I'm Michael Myers. Hoo-ah! Right? And it was the way he walked was different, everything. And, you know, that should let you know that by the end of the movie, even my friends who were with me were just checked out. We're just like, let's just... And, I mean, yeah, I know I've rambled on now. But, yeah, that's basically in a nutshell why. I mean, just whenever I talk about Halloween 6, it's just... It is, in a way, the most fascinating one to talk about because of its history.
Mm-hmm. So, what would you say? Do you like the movie? Do you prefer the producer's cut? Do you prefer the theatrical cut?
Oh, I definitely prefer the producer's cut. I don't think either one is a particularly good movie, but I think that the producer's cut has much more of a sense of swinging for the fences and doing things that, even if they don't work as well as they should, are at least intellectually interesting and mm-hmm. would have hooked me enough to say, you know, it wasn't great, but I'll go see 7. I'll go see 7. Mm-hmm. Whereas I walked out of the theatrical cut, I was like, F this series. I'm done. Yes.
When was the first time that you saw the producer's cut?
Oh, I don't know. It was a couple of years ago.
Okay, because I know that both Zach and I, this is the first time that we've seen it.
Now, I was aware of it. I had seen you know, clips of it online. You know, there's so many fan videos now, like on YouTube, and analysis of this and review of that. So I was aware of like the concept of it, and it's in like, oh, so there's like a cult thing going on instead of like a hospital prison going on. You know, mainly at mm-hmm. the end is the main difference, and less Loomis, more gore. And that was pretty much the mandate, and that's what happened. But you know, to your point, John. Michael Lerner is the different Michael Myers you see running through the hallways at the end, as opposed to George P. Wilbur, who was in the original shoot. Michael Lerner replaced him as Michael Myers for the reshoots. Of course, George P. Wilbur had played him in Halloween 4 and was out for 5, back for 6, out for the reshoots of 6. So, mm-hmm. more trivia!
So many Michaels.
Anyway.
So many Michaels.
So many Michaels. So, okay, so I'm going to go into this. I'm going to say, look, I think I prefer the theatrical cut of this over the producer's cut, but I think it's really interesting between them. Like, neither of them are great. I really do enjoy 6, but it's not that I enjoy it because it's a Halloween film, because it's so weird is why I enjoy it. Like, I John knows this. I am all over Twitter. I am trying to convince as many people as possible to watch Children of the Corn 4 because I love it so damn much. And it's this odd movie that really doesn't fit in the rest of the franchise. And a lot of people would say that would be Halloween 3, but I think it's almost more Halloween 6 that really doesn't fit, because Michael Myers is really a completely different character in this, and the story of what they've done is... They've taken this character into a really bizarre direction. And I realize some of those seeds were laid in the last film, but this has really taken those seeds, and we've got some Frankenplant that's grown from those seeds, because this is a strange movie. But I really enjoy it. I love the mood of the film. I love the lighting. I love the way it's the way it's filmed and the way that it looks. And it really is one of those 80s horror movies that made me fall in love with the genre. And it was, this was the last Michael Myers movie that I saw, aside from Resurrection and then like whatnot, like from when I found it, like this was the last one that I saw. I had seen H2O before I had seen this one for the first time. So I have an appreciation for this movie kind of withdrawn from the Halloween franchise, but I really do enjoy this movie a lot. So I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I think it's interesting to always go back and see when you hear about, oh, well, there were reshoots and here's a new version. Everybody, you know, people think, you know, you had the modern day, right? You have Justice League and you have Rogue One and you have Solo and you have, you know, et cetera, et cetera. They're basically reshooting most of movies before they come out. And you're like, oh, man, I can't wait to see the whatever. But this is going on. This has been going on for a long time, you know, especially genre movies. And this goes back, I think about Blade Runner. I think about Superman 2. You know, you have all these versions of these movies that come out. I mean, Superman 2 is there's an epic story on that, and you know, we know we'll have time, but we'll do it. We'll do a Superman H80 at some point, and we'll talk about Superman movies. But you know, this is very similar to like the Richard Donner cut of Superman 2, because you had a movie and it was reshot, and there were different reasons why it was reshot. It was, you know, directors and whatnot. But you watch the two movies together because they finally came out, much like this movie, you finally resurfaced, right? They finally put together the Richard Donner cut of Superman 2 in 2006, and so you could watch both back-to-back. And it's a very surreal experience because you see the seams, you see the reshoots, you kind of get, and you kind of appreciate the, even though you didn't like the theatrical, you appreciate what it did because you're like, oh, you really recontextualized this and made it make sense when it really shouldn't have at all. Superman 2, I think, this might be a weird opinion, but I think both versions of that are kind of a wash, you know? You have Marlon Brando in the director's cut, but the theatrical cut makes more sense, is a better story, it's not just a mishmash job. Same thing here, I'd say. I think it's kind of a wash. I lean more towards the producer's cut because of Donald Pleasance, because he is why you come to these movies at this point, and my, for me anyway, and there's a lot more...
I come for the death.
Well, he's the death of Donald Pleasance after this one, so there you go. But that's what gives this one some gravitas, some weight, you know. And it did, all of his best scenes were, like, cut in the other one, you know. In theatrical, it's like, I'm watching this producer's cut, I'm like, wow, Donald Pleasance, he actually had some juice left in the tank, you know. And they completely just cut it out of the movie because it was quote-unquote boring. That's very disappointing. So seeing both these cuts now, I would definitely, if I were to ever watch Halloween 6 again, which I don't see on my schedule anytime soon, it would be the producer's cut of these two.
Okay.
Yeah.
It really is fascinating. And we are having a tough time differentiating the two because we did watch them both so close. And that's fine. I mean, it's an interesting discussion. But what I found fascinating is how the stories are so different. But not just that, the gore is different. Like, there's that one death scene where that trucker's head gets basically ripped off. Well, that blood is gone from the producer's cut.
Yeah.
And when Michael Myers takes the guy, the father, and, you know, puts him on the electrical outlet or whatever, and then his head, like, explodes, like, that's gone from the producer's cut. So I found that surprising, because usually when you get a director's cut, they're, like, unrated director's cuts. There's more blood and more gore and whatnot. And in this case, they actually pulled that back, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah,
but it's the producer's cut, guys. What, Susan, you know, what other movie has there been a producer's
cut? I've never heard of that. The only other movie I've heard that had something odd is Star Trek the Motion Picture with the director's edition.
Honestly, you could say that the theatrical cut of Superman 2 is the producer's cut. Except there were...
That's true.
That, because that, you know, was dispute with Donner that led to all of that mess. But like,
and the Salkinds, right, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that... I think that... In all honesty, if I boil it down, I think that both cuts reveal that there was a director who was out of his depth, not because I think he didn't have the skill level to do this movie. I think it's because this wasn't he didn't want to be here. Like, it just felt weird. There are choices. It violates. I am really weird about slow motion use in a film, and I think that Halloween 6 is one of those movies that just abuses the hell out of slow motion to substitute slow motion for emotion. And I think just on the strength of the ending, I mean, there's all of that extra stuff. There's all the occult stuff. But the producer's cut ending at least makes sense. It at least holds together everything that came before, whereas the ending of even rewatching the theatrical cut this time, you know, I was actually live texting with my aforementioned friend Joey while I was, oh God, I'm going through this again. And he's like, oh yeah, let's talk. You know, I'm sitting there live texting with him and I'm like, 10 syringes of weird yellow green stuff isn't enough, but 11 will kill him. Like, it was just this weird out of nowhere. And I can never forgive that ending in the theatrical cut where, you know, oh, I'll stay here. And then you just hear Loomis screaming and the mask was there. And I still remember being in the theater. What the hell?
The most jarring part of that, John, is then it cuts to in memory of Donald Pleasance.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Goodness gracious.
I like going in the direction of, you know, in the one sense, you know, he's supernatural because there is a supernatural cult behind him. But at the same time, I think that one of the things that removes a lot of the terror of Michael Myers, especially in Six, is it makes his murderous rampage so specific. I can watch Halloween Six and I can, you know, well, how do I solve this equation? How do I make sure Michael Myers doesn't kill me? Don't visit Haddonfield, don't live in his house, and don't be an a-hole DJ. Got it. Cool. Those three things are checked off. I'm fine.
But if you live in his house, in his mind, you are his family.
Yes.
See, and that's,
that was a
stretch. That's in the producer's cut, but that wasn't really in the other one, right? Like,
correct.
They didn't say that specifically in the theatrical cut. And those were some of the issues that I had with the producer's cut, where they drew that line, and they're like, see, my fan logic in my head of why he's pursuing these people in the theatrical cut is because they're Strodes. Okay? And it's not necessarily because they're in his house, right? That's just a plot element that's added to it. It's because they're Strodes. Therefore, they're related to Laurie Strode. Okay? So,
I honestly think it makes more sense the other way, Brendan.
So, I'm just saying, this is for my fan logic. And then, one other thing that was in the producer's cut, I live texted this to John while I was watching it, and I'm like, is Jamie's kid Michael's kid?
Yeah.
Like, I'm getting the strong impression here that Jamie's kid is Michael's kid, and then they do call it out flat out that where they're watching the baby, and then, I don't know, the blonde girl, I'm bad with names, I'm sorry, turns to Michael and says, you know that it's your kid, right? And that made me really uncomfortable, and I really didn't like that. Because, like, that is not in the theatrical cut itself. Now, this is 6 years after Halloween 5. Jamie was, what, 8 in Halloween 5? 9? So she's 14 or 15 here, which there's problematic elements for her being a 15-year-old, and they've kept her, and she's now pregnant. However, I find it more problematic that these people have, like, manipulated Michael into becoming the father of his niece's baby. And I don't, that took it out of the movie for me. And that was a huge problem for me with the producer's cut.
But see, I think that there's definitely some timeline. They play a little loose with the timeline in terms of what her age is. She definitely looks older. She looks, yes.
Well, yeah,
like
she looks 25 or so. And I thought, yeah. And initially I was thinking, oh, they did a jump forward in time. They don't, though, because it comes out in 95. They said it was 6 years previous. She was 9 years old. She's 15.
Yeah.
She had this baby. So,
but see, we've made reference to Star Trek before. I think that's a lot like Star Trek II's. There's a man out there that I haven't seen in 15 years. But wait, Star Trek the Motion Picture took place how long after the original series? So it's 10 years between, you know, like, exactly how long has this been going on, sort of thing? I think that we have a situation like that where they're basically fudging it and saying, you know,
I would agree with you if they didn't say specific years, though. Like even they go through, like, it was 1978, 10 years later, a year later, 6 years after that. Like, they kind of shoot themselves in the foot. Had they not referenced actual calendar, like Star Trek, it came like the Okudas had to come up with that whole timeline later, so you could fudge any numbers you want with the Star Trek movies. But in this movie, you're actually referencing dates on the calendar, so they kind of, I wish you could. Right. I wish you could bend the logic that way, but they're too specific with the dates, I think, John.
But also, so I'm going to add one thing to it, though, as well. In the theatrical cut, and the way that 5 ends, going into the theatrical cut of 6, Jamie could have gotten pregnant completely external to this situation.
Yes.
Right?
Sure.
So she could be young, she could be a troubled youth who's gotten pregnant and whatnot, and then the doctor finds out she's pregnant and brings her into the situation. And that's honestly how I've always interpreted the situation, where in the producer's cut of 6 with those flashbacks, they clearly have kept her since they took Michael Myers out of the hospital.
Yes, this is where I think there's an interesting thing that happens, I think, sometimes, where we sort of personally find a line where these evil people are evil, but not in these ways that break these other taboos that we have, right? We're talking about a murderous death cult that in one version is cloning Michael, maybe?
Yes.
And in another version, okay, you know, it's the awful byproduct of this abusive blah, blah, blah. Like, they're an evil death cult. Like, that's, you know, why should I expect them to adhere to any societal norms, you know, whatsoever? I'm not excusing anything. I'm just saying, like, if that's the case.
Yeah.
Yes. But then with the producer's cut as well, okay, so what's her name? Kara?
Kara.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't quite comprehend why they had Kara at the end and were, like, performing the ceremony on her with her son there watching. Like, I didn't see the focus there that I was able to wrap my mind around in the theatrical
cut. It looked as if they were replicating the ceremony they did with Jamie, but to what end? I agree, Brandon. I don't know. But it made more sense than throwing her in a jail cell, I think. So.
Yeah.
I would say that the biggest sin with that story wise is that they made the story too. They split elements up that they didn't need to. It makes more sense if instead of Kara, you have Jamie in the movie, and you have one character going on this journey from beginning to end, instead of here's another person with a kid, and just like this person with a kid, it's obviously they could have consolidated that into one single plot line.
That is super odd, because Jamie and Kara have similar plot lines. They both are single moms with this baby. You don't know where the baby came from. And even in the producer's cut, and looking at, you know, what people have been saying online, there's a theory that the dad, Biff, the dad, is the father of Danny.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's another... I know that's crazy, but people out there are like, oh, see? Because that's why he's looking at her picture. He's like, happy Halloween, little girl. Takes a swig. That's why there's this resentment so much. He disappeared for 5 years. She came back with his kid. I don't know. I'm just saying, there's a lot of crazy... When the movie doesn't define anything, the fans fill in the gaps. And that's one of the gaps the fans fill in. So, yeah, and because Michael has the incest thing, you're like, oh, is that going on here too? I do think maybe that they'd split up the female main character into two... because Daniel Harris did not return. Now, she wanted to return, and she actually emancipated herself so she could be an adult to work on the film and reprise the role, because this was like her thing, you know. But ultimately, you know, she did all this work to become, you know, emancipated so she could work beyond the child hours she would have been, because she would have been like 17 and stuff. But only she turned down the role in the film because she hated the way Jamie was portrayed. And, you know, I agree with her. And then they probably let's cut her out of this. Let's add this other person in and let's move this around. Although it's more universe shrinking if Danny from the first one ends up with Jamie Lee Curtis's daughter, Jamie. I mean, this is some Star Wars prequel style universe shrinking at this point, because the Lloyd family are living in the Myers house across the street from Danny. Anyway, there you go.
Yes.
Yep. I mean, it's a mess of a movie. I mean, I think that whether you look at theatrical or producers, you have a movie where it's the core concepts that don't, like, they needed more drafts of the scripts. They needed more time to think things through. My brain goes to the fact that the opening of the theatrical is Miramax and the opening of the producer's cut is Dimension. And the whole Miramax thing was actually one of the reasons that fans at the time, oh, Miramax, they make the good movies. And knowing the tendency of Miramax to take movies and, you know, recut the Weinsteins were well known for taking possession of a movie and recutting it before it went out. I mean, Zach, I don't know who specifically chopped it up and put it into the theater and specifically ordered the reshoots or anything like that. But I really think that is that a tell that you have Miramax in front of one and Dimension in front of the other? Is that specifically because somebody at Miramax did something to this movie or saw the producer's cut? And
I would attribute that more to the time differential from when the theatrical cut came out to the producer's official release.
Okay.
That's all that I would associate that with myself. Hmm. You know, because the producer's cut didn't come out at the same time as the theatrical cut. It was a bootleg version that was out there and didn't have a regular release, an official release, until not that long ago, I think.
That's a very good point, because Dimension is a division of Miramax, or was a spinoff of Miramax or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that they would have had the ability to inherit the rights to do what they wanted with the footage or something.
Like, does Dimension get theatrical release? They're not a home video release company or anything?
No, Dimension released to theaters. I'm pretty sure they still exist.
I think they got it taken over by someone. I don't know. These smaller companies are eating each other up. I don't think they exist anymore.
Yeah. Probably like Lionsgate owns them now or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah, somewhere in there. But Brandon, you prefer the theatrical cut. I mean, I look at the gore in the theatrical cut, and I mean, it is a stunning thing that the producer's unrated cut is less gory. does that enhance that they went for broke with the gore in that? Or what are some of the factors there?
It is over the top, and we've mentioned a couple of times that the Halloween films are not really that gory, right? I mean, like, we don't see a lot all the time. A lot is done off camera. So I would have to say that I think, based on this rewatch, from what I can remember on these over the last several weeks, this is the theatrical cut of this is the goriest of them so far. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely agree.
Yeah, like, when that guy's neck gets ripped, like, you don't see a lot of it, but you see this wet mound of flesh that's, like, I'm just assuming is his, like, spine. Like, I'm guessing they ripped his head off.
Yes.
Right? And, like, when that father-in-law Biff guy, like, when he explodes, like, I laughed because I'm like, wow, that is just bizarre.
That was awesome.
Over
though.
The top.
That is
and
the
I'm
one
having fun with this.
Kill. That is the one
although,
kill I prefer in the theatrical cut. When his
although,
head explodes.
With so many cases, you could make this argument, but how does Michael, in that specific instance, keep his mask and suit so clean? Did he have spares in the van? Because
he's got like a anti-stick padding all over him, like it's a spray.
That,
like
that makes sense.
Yeah,
and now, if he does have a support team, I did start wondering: does that mean that's why his clothes and his mask are always so pristine? Is he able to do a quick change when he needs to?
He might.
I don't know.
He definitely might. But one of the shining stars in this film, I think, is Kim Darby. You know, like, I think she does a really good job in this movie of being this, I'm certain, beaten wife, you know, who's afraid of her husband. And, you know, the way she's doing that laundry and flipping that power switch on that, which would have absolutely no effect of it, but, you know, like her facial expressions. And when she's running out of the house, and I know that the editing probably has something to do with it as well, but when she's running in the backyard and whatnot, the fear that's on her face, she's amazing. I don't know. I love Kim Darby.
I 100% agree with you. I think she was the most normal, relatable person in this movie, and I actually feared for her life, and I think there was a great ratcheting up of suspense for her death, and she's probably, the underrated star of this film. She doesn't have much to do, but she does a lot with what she has to work with.
Mm-hmm. She's so believable. Like, when she picks up that axe and is looking at it, like, I know what she wants to go sharpen it because it's a dull axe. You know, like, she's like a woman who's taking care of the house. You know, I'm certain this husband of hers beats her, like, you know, probably on a regular basis, you know, because this is not a nice guy. But I think she does a really good job of the character. So, I don't know. I just want to give a shout out to her because she's awesome.
I agree with both of you. Yeah, she's awesome. And she's also, you know, you say normal and relatable. I think that another particular sin of Halloween, the curse of Michael Myers, is, of course, with the exception of Jamie, most of the people that Michael kills are jackholes. That is something that horror movies in general fell into that I didn't care for, that they went to great lengths to make sure that you didn't sympathize with the people being killed. And it's sort of, I don't know, I think it's cheap because it allows you to say, yeah, but you know, the dad was kind of a jackass. So, like, you know, yeah, maybe well, he doesn't deserve that.
I think how that happens, John, is the main attraction now has become the slasher, right? It's the Freddy Krueger, the Jason, the Michael Myers. You root for them now. So you want him to kill all these annoying people. But yeah, definitely the supporting cast of these movies, they've gotten worse and worse in character and in acting, frankly, in every single movie, like his targets. Like even in Halloween 2, the people who worked at the hospital, they were kind of sleazy, but they were kind of lovable assholes, you know? But now these people are just, they're the worst. Yeah. You want to see them die.
Mm-hmm. They were great characters in Halloween 2, for sure. Why don't we talk about some of the deaths now that we're talking about some of the secondary characters? You guys got to help me with some of this here. You know, every movie gets higher and higher, and this one here, we're sitting at a total of 24 people in this film.
Now, this is a theatrical cut. Is that correct, Brandon?
Yes, this is. So, but, you know, we might have to take some of these out, and we might have to make our own judgments on some of these here. But the first one here, Nurse Mary, head impaled on metal wall spike. Okay, amazing. So...
conveniently placed metal wall spike.
Multiple metal spikes down the walls,
but it's the cult of the thorn. It makes sense. There's thorns on the wall. It makes perfect sense.
All right, you've explained it away for me. That works. Okay.
And, what I liked about it and what I like about that shot is they do that callback that I liked to that kill in the first one where Michael Myers is looking at the corpse hanging there.
The head tilt.
And he's like, the head tilt and he's looking. And I'm like, it's a direct callback to that, but I like it. I can see how different a body this is and everything. And this is not the same Michael, but I kind of like that they did that because that is a Michael Myers action.
Agreed.
To me. And that's, I like that one. So next one, the motorist, neck snapped, head twisted around. Jamie Lloyd, that's another one, okay? So the differences in her death between the theatrical and the producer's cut, her death in the producer's cut just didn't make any sense to me. But she was impaled through the back and torn apart on a thresher, which was, like, pretty epic.
That was a horrible way to kill who has been your protagonist the last two movies. A complete disservice to the character, and I completely understand why Dalian Harris turned it down if that was the case. Even as nonsensical, even though, you know, John, I 100% agree with you, I prefer the producer's cut, again, because things make more sense. Maybe Jamie's death is the one thing that makes less sense in the producer's cut, but I do prefer it to the awful, awful end they gave her in the theatrical cut.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that whole thresher thing was, I don't plug into that at all. And, to your point, Zach, I agree with you. And I would say that it's akin to what they did with, Newton Hicks, at the beginning of Alien 3, where it's like, really? You had to do it that way? Come on.
Brandon will defend that movie till the day he dies, but I agree with you, John.
Thank you.
I am perfectly fine with Newt dying.
So next That's kill in Halloween 6 that we can talk about would be?
So again, I'll mention again, we are getting this from horror.wiki.com/the lists of death in Halloween movies. Deborah Strode hacked up with an axe.
Good death. Good death with the sheets and the blood. Yeah.
Yep.
John's, like, I just, that's the weird one. So, like, what, did Michael Myers, like, try to do the laundry afterwards?
Like, well, that's Michael. He's got care. He cleans up after himself. He, you know, that shows character. I do enjoy that there is some continuity there where he like said, "Oh, I don't want anyone else that comes home to know what happens. Let me clean up after myself and hide in the closet."
Yeah.
Okay, well, while we're talking about this, one thing I forgot to mention that I want to talk about. So one of the things that doesn't work for me is the Thorne thing, really, with the Michael Myers, but I do think it's interesting. Because with what we know of Michael Myers, is he really going to take the time to stop and burn this into a stack of hay? Like this symbol of his back when Jamie dies? I mean, like, that's one of the things where I like it, and I like the Thorne stuff. It's really interesting. It's just so bizarre in a Halloween
movie.
It's just
science.
Yeah. Since we have established that he has a support team, they came in and did it afterwards.
Right there, John. Yes. See, we were just knocking out these potholes left and right in this movie. I love it.
Works for me. John Strode, stomach impaled, carried / pinned to the fuse box with kitchen knife, electrocuted, head exploded.
Amazing. I love that in the theatrical cut. That is maybe the one change that I was like, oh, they should have left that in, because that guy was an ass. He had it coming.
Yeah, you kind of need that head exploding as like a relief.
Although that was a great scene. I love when he comes home. He's like, oh, God, she actually left.
Yeah.
I'm the boogeyman. Oh, boogeyman. I love the whole setup of that. It was probably my favorite death.
But I mean, seriously. Okay, just to pause there for a second. Like, the guy knew what house this was. His wife calls him in a panic. He comes home. She's not there. Lights go out. How are you not making a Bugs Bunny hole in the wall exit from the house at that point?
Like, he kicked back a few drinks. You know, he's feeling a buzz. You know, and when he comes home, he hits his kid's bike when he pulls up, stumbles in. You know, his shirt was like half unbuttoned during this too. It was like, what? Anyway, sloppy guy. But I totally agree with you, John.
He's like, drunk.
That's great. He should have told his family.
He's looking at the daughter's picture in the producer's cut, but not in the theatrical, right? But yes,
that's correct.
I know what you're saying.
That's correct.
Barry Sims stabbed in the chest in his car. I like that one, and I like that in the producer's cut when they went from the one van to the other. In the shot, because that lets you know that he actually thought he was in the right van, and that's why he got in that van. I don't know. I like that.
That explains a lot. Yes.
Tim Strode, throat slit with kitchen knife. Okay, so this is kind of, we've been calling it out where, you know, there's always kind of a death where somebody's talking with somebody and they don't realize that it's Michael. It's happened in every movie, and this is the closest that came to that, because he thinks he's talking to his girlfriend and handing him the towel, but it didn't pay off in the way that the other ones have paid off. So I was a little disappointed.
The same thing. I was like, oh, is this that in this movie? So disappointing. John, what's your point?
Yeah.
Well, just another thing is I am no expert in what Michael Myers does for a living. I've never attempted it. I just want to put that, but
he's a librarian.
Yes. But where he cuts in that scene in the bathroom, would not be the immediate effect death that is portrayed on screen. Like that is it's in the wrong spot. And it's one of those things where I think that you see, a lack of attention to detail sort of thing. Like if you go back to Halloween 2, it's in the right spot. It's very carefully choreographed, but it is where it would be for the instant takedown. Whereas this is not, this is just obviously like, oh yeah, throat cut, and then just block it real quick and be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that didn't quite work. And they kind of cut out of there pretty quickly, but the guy's dead.
Yeah.
Because then they see him under the blankets and whatnot. And, next, we have Beth stabbed 6 times in the back. A sanitarium patient was stabbed in the stomach, which we didn't see on screen, but they mention, I guess.
I can't keep track. That was the woman who comes out and talks to Ant-Man. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
The woman who comes out and talks to Ant-Man.
Yeah, when he's looking for
the woman with the
Laurie
bad
Strode.
Teeth,
Kara.
Yeah. Yes.
He's
yes.
back
okay, yes.
and he's angry.
Yes. Okay. Yes. 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 Dr. Bonham. No, so the next ones are all listed. Again, so there's so many deaths that I can't keep track while I'm watching. So I got them all offline. But the next one are all described as hacked up with a surgical machete. Dr. Bonham, Don Thompson, Mrs. Blankenship, 8 cult doctors, the entire Tom cult?
Thorn.
I'm sorry, I don't have my glasses on. And Dr. Terrence Wynn.
Oh,
so
Wynn
actually
died
it's probably
the...
higher than 24.
You know, it was hard to keep track because of the damn strobe light.
Yes. Yeah, the strobe light was not great, and I to speak to the whole ending thing, like I remember at the time it's like, wait, he's a member of this, and he's what the heck? Why is he killing all of these people now? None of them lived in his house. None of them are related to him. And they're part of the cult. What's going on?
Did you like the workaround, though, of they had to find a way to get the guys out of the costumes and turn them into just doctors because they cut the cult thing? They're like, and then Kyle Riker comes in. He's like, hey, guys, Halloween's over. Good change out of that. And now I understand now why they did that watching the producer's cut. So anyway,
yep.
There you go.
Yep.
And yes, I love referring to characters in this film as characters I know from other films that the actors play. So please continue.
Well, you never called her Miri.
Oh, my God. No. Oh, my God. You just blew my mind. Kim Darby. Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah.
You didn't realize that was Miri?
No. Oh.
Holy smokes, man.
Miri's becoming
yes,
a woman.
She's Miri. She's Miri.
Oh, my
yes.
God. I love this movie so much more now. You just added a half Jack Lantern for me. Go, please. Go get it.
Cult doctor face smashed against the bars. I think that was my favorite kill in the movie because, like, literally just pushed him through and then knocked over this maximum security, like,
yes,
gate. Like, I don't know. I loved it. And then Dr. Sam Loomis, they say unknown, but my interpretation is he died in the movie.
Yeah!
How many cult doctors or the Thorn cult? It says the entire Thorn cult. How many people do we think that was? Because that ups the kill count.
Well, I don't. How many robots did we say died in Halloween 3? We just use
14.
The same number. That's fine.
14.
Just use the same number.
Okay. Well, let's just really. You want to do 14?
I don't.
Let's do 6.
Okay, 6, 6, 6.
You know what? Let's. Yeah.
There he goes. There. So
I say let's split the difference here. Okay, so like we got 14 on one hand, we got 6 on the other. Let's land at 9, 8 or 9.
Sure.
Yeah. No, let's land.
Okay,
at 9.
So I'm at 24 with a 1. I got to add 8 more to that, so that's 32 people in this movie. Fine. It's not the most accurate. I got to add 9 to my 68 is what? 77.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then added to my this one here is 93. Okay, so. Do we count Sam Loomis as dead? I say yes.
All right.
Because we don't see him again. So Michael
got away
total.
And killed him with his mask off.
This is now the third time Sam Loomis has died. Then Halloween 2, yes. Halloween 5, and now Halloween 6.
Well, yeah, okay. So then that's just it, though. My interpretation, both of these movies, Michael got away at the end of both of these movies. He didn't die in either of these films.
He'll never
that's
die.
That's true.
Because yes. In my interpretation of the theatrical cut, he killed Loomis and then, like, went off. And then he left Kyle Riker in the mask. And as he walks off, they pan down and they show his boots.
So, in a Halloween, guys, finally, in a Halloween 7, Michael Myers would have a different look in either version. Amazing.
I will point out, though, with the whole shot of the boots at the end, when the good doctor is laying there with the mask on, the boots aren't his cowboy boots. So the footwear, Michael had like a spare pair of work boots or something like that.
Yeah, because they try to make that some reveal look, guys. It's not the stirrups; it's the worker boots.
Right.
I didn't realize that. Yeah, Michael Myers should have been wearing the boots still because that was okay. Gotcha. That was when.
Yeah.
Okay. Good call, John.
Yeah.
God, these movies are so bad. Continuity. I can't believe the Halloween series mess up continuity like that. It's unbelievable, guys.
Especially when they got to number 6. Jeez.
It's not the mark of quality I expect from the Akkad family. That's all I'm going to say.
Not everything can be Mission Impossible Fallout, everyone. All right, give us a break here.
Okay, so our grand total. So Michael's at 77 people, 4 dogs, 2 shrapnel deaths, and 8 people killed by somebody else. So our grand total is 93 people, 14 robots, 4 dogs, 2 shrapnels, and an assumed death.
which just to throw out there, the radio host Barry actually, and I think it's him, but somebody refers to Michael Myers as the most
The notorious the serial killer in history.
He says specifically the deadliest or something like that, where people refer to Michael Myers as, you know, having killed the most people of a mass murder. And I every time I hear it, I'm like, wow, no, not even close, man.
Yeah, that bothered
Michael
me.
Michael is a total underachiever there.
Excellent, right on. Okay, well, John, any final thoughts? Do you want to give us your rating on the film? Anything else you want to say?
Not really.
Either one. We've kind of crossed. We've crossed from one to the other for the whole discussion.
Do you think we should give different ratings for the theatrical and the?
Oh yeah.
Well, my rating's the same for both.
Oh, mine is not.
No, I'm totally down for that. Theatrical cut, especially because the ending is so terrible. We're using jack-o'-lanterns.
Yes.
I'll give it one because there are occasional moments that are like, yeah, okay, you know, you tried. And for the producer's cut, I would give it two, maybe 2.5 because they really, I thought that they at least had a consistent thread that went through everything. I still had problems with the way they did certain things, and I had problems with the direction and, you know, other stuff, but I thought at the very least I was interested and I got more Loomis. So it puts me in a more forgiving mood. Probably 2, though, is where I'd stick.
Okay. Mr. Moore?
Well, I just, as we wrap up here, I got to ask you guys, what did you think of Paul Steven Rudd?
Who?
I looked at that guy and I said, you know what? You've got a career ahead of you, young man. You're going to do something special.
Well, then you had some special foresight, John, because I thought he was terrible. I love Paul Rudd. I really do. And the man has not aged in 20 years. Like, seriously, him and Tom Cruise must, you know, bathe in the same fountain or whatever, because they look the same.
Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, and Patrick Stewart. But they look the same from 1996 to 2016. You cannot see the difference. And but seriously, I know he was playing like a mentally broken, you know, Tommy, but I don't know. The direction was off there. I mean, I don't know, but he was so bad. Like, it was, and you know, a big difference between the producers and the theatrical cut is the theatrical cut starts off with, you know, Paul Rudd narrating, like, Michael Myers, blah, blah, blah. But then in the producer cut, you have Donald Loomis. I'm mixing characters. He is with the character. Donald Pleasance, you know, being like, I trained Michael Myers. Blah, blah. And that was much more, set the tone so much better than goofy Paul Rudd talking. And then, you know, one final thing I'll say, and then I'll give my jack-o'-lanterns. Joe Chappelle, we're giving him a lot of crap here. I do think there are some certain moments that are well directed. I don't know how involved he was in the editing, especially in theatrical, because I hated all the sound effects in the theatrical all the time, and all these flashes, and it's like some kind of music video guy edited, and it was just so, did not fit what they should have been doing. But he went on to direct 16 episodes of Fringe, which blew my mind, because I love Fringe.
Really?
Fringe.
It's one of my favorite shows. Wow. So good on you, Joe, for hanging in there and putting out some great product later on in your career. So that's what I'll say there. So my rating, I have two different ratings for this. As I've been, you know, I've kind of painted myself in a corner here, John. You know, you haven't been in all our discussions, but I've been ranking them lower and lower. So I have no choice but to rank it this low in comparison, relatively speaking, to the other ones. I'm going to have to give the theatrical cut half a jack-o'-lantern. It is just... It is a terrible, incomplete mishmash of a movie. You can, even without knowing all the drama, you knew that something was changed in this movie, and it was just to see. And not just that, like, and then you compare it to the producer's cut, and you see what they chose to took out, and like what they said, this is garbage. I'm going to put in this instead. It's superior, and they're like, no, you guys are way off. You know, all the Donald Pleasance stuff far superior. You get to see so much more of him in the producer's cut, and that's why I'm going to get the producer's cut. 1 3/4 jack-o'-lanterns for the producer.
1 3/4.
All right.
Oh, you people are harsh on this movie. I like this. I had a lot of fun watching this movie. I mean, like I said, you know, it's good. It's entertaining. It's bizarre because it's not really a Halloween film, but I still like it. And I feel a lot about this film the same that I do with Children of the Corn 4, which I'm still trying to get John to watch. Right?
I haven't seen any Children of the Corn movies.
You can watch Children of the Corn 4 and none of the other ones because it literally has nothing to do with the rest
of the Children of the Corn 4-0. I'm looking forward to that podcast, Brian.
There, you know, like there's bizarre things in this movie that don't quite make sense, like, you know, that suffer from the tropes of horror films. Like, okay, we'll be back with my radio show live from your house, and then they go home and have sex. They don't know that the DJ's dead. You know, like these are just the bizarre tropes of horror films. But I don't know. I think there's some fun stuff in this, and like I said, I prefer the theatrical cut over the produced cut. But I don't hate the produced cut. I don't hate either of these movies. I enjoy them. I think they're fun. I actually rank this third out of the six that we've seen so far.
Are you insane?
What?
Yeah. Like, I think this is definitely better than 4 and 5. And I just enjoyed it more than 3. You know, so,
well,
I
will say that the producer's cut, I will rank ahead of 4 and 5. I will absolutely do that.
Sure. So I'm like halfway there with you guys, right?
But yeah, the theatrical cut is no, it's the pits.
Man. I'll give you this, Brandon. It has the third best Michael Myers mask. All right. Because 1 and 2, then 6.
Out of the 5 we've seen
then
before?
4, then 5. Because that's my ranking of the masks. I don't know if you guys agree with me, but I think this is the best the mask has looked since the first two.
Yeah, but no, my rating on this one here that I gave on Letterboxd for both of them is 3.5 pumpkins. So,
you remember that question you asked online as to whether you were a little too generous with your ratings, Brandon?
Yes, I did.
I think
Zach said, yes, you definitely are. Yeah,
I'm just trying to balance this guy out, John.
And I responded, no, that is not true. Ernest Goes to Camp is a 5-star film.
You know what, though? That's what I love is that, and I think that's what I love about being a horror fan, is that even while Zach and I can sit here and sort of smash the pumpkin, like I can dig the fact that you're into this, you know, like just with any horror series, there's always it always like works for somebody, and it's just fun, and I just wish that everybody who was a fan of anything could sort of like plug into that mentality of like just enjoy the fact that somebody loves it, you know, it's cool.
Yes. Well, you haven't heard it yet, but Zach and I, our conversation last week, we had very different opinions on 5, and my ranking of 5 was a heck of a lot lower than Zach's. So
really?
When that episode is released, because we don't have it released yet. We actually have only had one episode so far, so you know we're halfway done this, and we've had some positive reception, some great response on the internet, so people seem to like the podcast. We're very happy to hear that. And it's a lot of fun. I'm having a great time doing this. I'm really happy. And John, I'm really thankful that you got to join us. I've really been looking forward to this conversation with you. I've really been looking forward to watching the producer's cut of this, because now my Halloween journey is complete, because now that ever-elusive producer cut has finally made its way into my brain, and I shall never unforget it, or never forget it. I shall never unsee it, is what I meant to say. But cool. John, where can people find you when you're not burning crazy symbols onto wheat?
When am I not burning crazy symbols onto wheat? But you can see me talking about that on Twitter as Kessel Junkie, and you can find me over on the Nerd Party, where I am co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast with Matthew Rushing. And even though it's dormant right now, we're going to be bringing back Great Shot Kid pretty soon with me and Mike Schindler. And you can also find me out there co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig.
Zach, where can people find you when you're not hiding your baby in a bathroom in a bus station that's been abandoned?
Man, they never clean up that bus station, do they? Gosh, but it's probably pretty accurate.
They did a terrible job cleaning that bus station.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonCach. I'm the host of my own podcast, Always Hold On to Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman Show. You can find us on Twitter at AlwaysSmallville with 1S. And you can find me on the Trek FM network, the Star Trek Podcast Network, at Trek FM on Twitter. I'm one of the hosts of Standard Orbit, our original series podcast. We talk about all things old and new, Captain Kirk and the Enterprise.
And me, when I'm not, you know, I don't know. I can't even think of something nasty that I could be doing. I don't know. When I'm not...
Don't go there, Brandon. There's so many bad things you can say.
No. I know where your brain... No. Just when you're not walking around in silver-tipped cowboy boots.
There we go.
Yes. Perfect. Yes, that's much cleaner than I was thinking. Yes. Where my head went.
Yeah.
When I'm not walking around in silver-toed Cowboy Boots. You can find me on Trek FM with a show called Melodic Treks, which is all about the music of Star Trek, a show called Warp 5, which is all about Star Trek Enterprise, and over on the Fandom Podcast Network with a show called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, which is all about, you guessed it, Alfred Hitchcock films. And I have had one other small little project that's going to be kind of an intermittent, maybe monthly, maybe semi-monthly podcast over on the Cinematic Sound Radio Network, and it's called Breaking the Waves, and it's a film score podcast, but I'm going to try and focus on electronic film scores. And my first episode was dedicated to the wonderful talents of the Academy Award winning duo of Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, so be sure to check that episode out because it's a lot of fun. But until next week, when we discuss the amazing Halloween H2O, and I'm so looking forward to seeing it now after this 6 weeks of discussion. I'm so looking forward to checking that out. Join us again when we can all cut off the head of Michael Myers altogether.